Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Kempo Carter Rinpoche's Six Perfections, Meditation and Wisdom by Lama Kathy Wesley. As we train in the Buddhist methods that change our lives, meditation plays a central role. At first, we learn mindfulness, which tames our mental afflictions. Next, we learn compassion meditation, which helps us overcome selfishness. Finally, we engage in meditation on mind itself, which helps reveal the basic nature of our minds and all things. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbuskTC.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good afternoon. Thanks a lot for being here today. We're going to be chatting for the next little while on the topic of Kempo Carter Rinpoche's teachings on the six perfect virtues. So in order to get started, let's start with the feeling of dedication and goodness, and have the sense that we are dedicating this session to the benefit of all sentient beings. I'll recite the four-line refuge prayer, which if you are familiar with it, you can chant along. And if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this practice to the benefit of all sentient beings. O Sanje Chodong Zochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Su Chi Da ji jin so ji pe sunam ki dro la pin shi sanje dru par sho. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the Sangha, most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Now, a short prayer to the teachers of the lineage.
O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chi War Pede Ten Chula Kadrin Jembo Gone Che Sun Te Ko Sun Tugging A Trup Sal Du So.
Okay, thanks. This is the regular Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. Dharma Talk for Columbus Karmateksum Choling. It's an exciting week for KTC Columbus because we think we might be able to start construction this week. So say lots of prayers for us, and we'll be sending out an announcement about all of this very soon so you can get all of the details, and we might even have a little celebration. So just watch your email, and also watch our Facebook page, Columbus KTC's Facebook page, and we'll give you all the details when they're available. But meanwhile, I know I've been hearing from a lot of my Dharma friends this week that some of them, their children are back at school. They're feeling some stress with their kids being back at school, and they're feeling some stress in their jobs, and they're feeling stress in lots of different places. So let's start our practice this afternoon with a little moment of quiet meditation so that we can kind of reduce the strain and the stress from the week. So I'm going to lead just a very, very short 1 minute meditation for you on allowing the mind to come to rest, which is great because the topic today is meditation. So thinking that as you sit on your meditation seat, if you're sitting in a chair, place your feet flat on the floor. If you're sitting on the floor, sit cross-legged. And then place your hands palm downward on your legs, whether you're sitting in a chair or if you're sitting on the floor. You can bring up the center breastbone and just bring it up a bit, and that'll give you nice shoulders that are straight but not hunched. You can tuck your chin in slightly. You can either close your eyes lightly or lightly open your eyes, gazing at the area in front of you. You're not looking at anything. You have what I would call a diffuse gaze. So that's a little bit about the physical. Now, in terms of the mental aspect of practice, you can actually make a mental aspiration that your practice be of benefit to all sentient beings. Having made this aspiration, then you can take one deep breath. Imagine that the breath goes deeply below the navel, and then breathe out. And then allow the breath to come and go naturally, placing your attention on the breath as it comes in and goes out. You have two choices. You can imagine the breath going all the way out and the breath going all the way in, or you can just be aware of the sensation of the breath at the nostrils. So we'll sit quietly for just a moment. In fact, I'm going to go get my gong. I'll be right back. I have a meditation gong I got this week. Okay, so now sitting comfortably, starting with the mental excellence of wishing to benefit others, let's sit quietly for just a minute or so. Okay, that's just a little bit of meditation to start with. What we've been doing for the last few weeks has been sharing Kempo Karsh Rinpoche's teachings about the six perfect virtues. And if you remember, the six perfect virtues are virtues that we consciously cultivate as part of the Mahayana Buddhist path. And by consciously cultivating these virtues, what happens is that our mind softens and expands, and our heart softens and expands, and we are able to include more sentient beings in our compassion and love. The other thing that allowing the mind to soften and expand helps us with is it helps us with the one of the main causes of suffering in our lives, which is self-fixation. If you remember the Buddha's teaching on the Four Noble Truths, he said suffering was part of life, suffering had a cause, it had a solution, and there's a path that leads to the end of suffering. The suffering is part of life, we seem to understand, but the cause of suffering is sometimes confusing because a lot of people think that the cause of suffering is not having enough of something. You don't have enough friends, or you don't have enough money, or you don't have enough material comfort. And so because we feel that happiness is dependent on these things that are external to us, we are busy all the time trying to accumulate those things that we see as being the causes of happiness. But what we find out is that these external things, such as name, fame, money, friends, possessions, and so forth, they are impermanent. And because they're impermanent, they eventually disappear. And when they disappear, we feel sad because we depended on these external things for our happiness. Whereas if we instead placed our attention on and worked toward the causes of happiness as taught by the Buddha, which is letting go of clinging, letting go of fixations, letting go of negative mental afflictions, and finding peace within ourselves through meditation. If we can do these things, then these are lasting sources of happiness that don't depend on external things. Now, the reason the Buddha in his teaching on the Four Noble Truths placed so much emphasis on the difficulty caused by clinging and fixation is because when we cling to and fixate on things, we actually cause suffering to ourselves. And because, as one of the Buddha's teachers said, if we're feeling the tight grip on things, she said, if something is hurting so much, it's because I'm holding on so tight. So often the things that we cling to are things that cause us suffering because of how tightly we're grasping them. And of all of those things we grasp the self-concept more than anything else. And you can see this operating in the world today. People say, my idea is better than your idea, and my idea deserves to survive, your idea does not deserve to survive, and then there's a lot of fighting because people disagree about which idea is best. And so the philosophy of Buddhism is more about being able to let go of clinging and fixation and being able to work from a place not of anger, but a place of strength. It's one thing to believe in a cause and another then to attack other people because of your cause. So there are different ways that human beings can create society. And from the Buddhist point of view, society is better created when there is conversation and when there is the capacity of people to actually see and actually hear one another. And so this is a little bit of why the Buddha taught the lack of grasping, or that self-grasping was a problem and that reducing grasping leads to more happiness. And so if we look at the six perfect virtues, this calls into play the third of the four noble truths, which is that if suffering has a cause, if clinging and fixation are the cause of suffering, by letting go of clinging and fixation, we can have happiness. And then the fourth noble truth is the method for letting go. It teaches us the how of letting go. And so if we look at the six topics that Kempo Rinpoche presented in his teachings, these six topics are all about learning how to let go. The first of the four of the six perfect virtues is generosity. By practicing generosity, we let go of clinging to our own things and give those to others. So we cultivate generosity. That helps us to cultivate the opposite of clinging, which is generosity. And then the second of the six perfect virtues is ethics and morality. If we practice ethical behavior and treat other beings with respect, and help them instead of hurt them, then we will become trusted sources for them, and we will actually be able to help them in ways we couldn't previously. The third of the six perfect virtues is patience. If we're generous and we're ethical, then it's very easy for us to be patient. And my favorite definition of patience came from the women's retreat master at our home three-year retreat center at Carmé Leng in upstate New York. Lama Lodro Lama was giving a teaching on generosity and patience and all of this sort of thing at the Columbus KTC some years back. And she said, patience isn't putting up with something. Patience is being open to how other people are, understanding how other people are, what their confusions are, and how they trip over themselves trying to gain happiness and so forth. By understanding how other people are, we are less likely to become angry with them in a way that's harmful. And so if we can be patient with others, then even though we might feel that they're not moving in the way we want them to move or doing the things we want them to do, we'll be patient and be able to find ways to express ourselves that will be less harmful and less hurtful. So that is the benefit of patience. Diligence is the next of the six perfect virtues, the fourth one. And diligence basically means that we are diligent in practicing virtue. We're diligent in generosity and ethics and patience and so on. And we're actually also diligent in our practice of meditation. Meditation is the fifth of the perfect virtues, and we'll be talking about that shortly. And then wisdom is the sixth of the perfect virtues, which we'll also be talking about shortly. So that's a little rundown of what we've talked about thus far. And I'm basing my instruction on some teachings that Kempo Kartha Rinpoche gave a number of years ago at our home monastery at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in upstate New York. The first of the topics is meditation. And he covers these two topics, meditation and wisdom, fairly quickly in his presentation. But I'm going to stop and make a couple of notes about something he said. He said that meditation has to do with learning how to rest the mind on an object of virtue. This is his definition for meditation. In other words, our mind has the capacity to come to rest. And because our mind has the capacity to come to rest, then we can cultivate that capacity for coming to rest through the practice of meditation. And in fact, in Gampopa's book, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, Gampopa says that when even if we have the qualities, have started developing generosity and ethics and patience, even if we've started to work on these perfect virtues, they won't go as far as they could if you don't have mental stability. And so cultivating mental stability through the practice of meditation helps these other virtues, generosity and ethics and patience and diligence. It helps all of the rest of these have power. And so as a result, Gampopa is quoting from the sutras that say that when our minds are busy, when we have busy minds, they go here and there and everywhere. I guess you could say they're bouncing off the walls. When our thoughts go here, there, and everywhere, it's very difficult for us to have quiet and stability in our minds. And we're actually more likely to be, he says, we're overpowered by our thoughts. And when we're overpowered by our thoughts, we believe in every single thought we have, which can lead to a lot of difficulty. Because as you know, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts in a day. And if we give all of them equal weight, then we're always going to be busy and busy and busy. I think that it is one of the difficulties of our age that that because of the internet and because of smart technology and phones and tablets and so forth, I think our attention span is shorter than ever. And so as a result, we're bouncing off the walls all the time. Because with the aid and help of our technology, it's almost like a perfect storm for confusion. We're overpowered by those thoughts. And if we are overpowered by every thought and every voice that is in our head has equal weight, we won't know what to do in just about any circumstance. And I think this is what a couple of people, I've read a little bit about the complexities of the internet. And one of the complexities of the internet is that there are so many voices, especially on social media, kind of shouting at us. And we give all of them equal weight. And because we give all of them equal weight, we're always anxious and confused. And this is what happens when we tend to be distracted and believe every story in our head. If we believe every story that our thoughts is telling us, if we believe every single one, we won't ever have peace in our mind. And we'll always be, he said, on the hooks of our mental defilements. And so, in other words, it will bring out the worst in us. Lack of stability, mental stability will bring out the worst in us. And so we owe it to ourselves to practice meditation, to bring about more mental stability and the capacity to rest our minds and to be attentive only to the things that are important. So Kempo Rinpoche puts it this way. He said, if we can rest our mind on a chosen object and become less and less distracted by thoughts, which is the work of meditation, he said, we will actually have more workability in our minds. And I think that this is a key piece, because right now our minds don't feel workable. Sometimes our minds feel out of control. And so through the practice of meditation, where we practice placing our attention on an object, whether it's the breath or an object that we place on a table in front of us, and then place our visual attention on that item, and then bring our attention back to the visual item again and again, or whether it's the breath, and we bring back our attention to the breath again and again and again. Every time we bring our attention back to the object and let go of thoughts and distractions, we actually cultivate a more stable mind. And as our mind becomes more stable, it becomes more workable, because it is more under our control and less under the control of chance. And so we lack this outcome, this beneficial outcome of stability, Rinpoche says, because our mind's innate capacity for peaceful clarity, and peaceful lucidity is obscured by mind's disturbance and distraction and agitation. I never really thought about it like this, but he's coming at the topic kind of from the other end. He's saying it's not that we have to practice this discipline of meditation and practice and discipline and da-da-da-da. He's actually saying our minds possess naturally the capacity to rest. Our minds naturally have the capacity to rest, but that we don't cultivate that capacity. And by not cultivating that capacity, we don't receive the benefits. And if you think about it, the capacity for rest, for the mind to come to rest, is something that we all have and we actually already enjoy. For example, who doesn't like to watch the sunset? Who doesn't like to watch the gathering dark? Who doesn't like to watch boats pass along on a river? Who doesn't like the feeling of the breeze and the swaying of the leaves and so forth? All of these things are quiet, and they can actually become sources of attention that are quieting and stabilizing. And since this is something that human beings can naturally do, why not cultivate it? And this is what Rinpoche says. He says in Tibet, they have a saying, you can't read a flag until it stops snapping. So how can we know what's on our mind until it slows down? He said that we can practice attention at first in order to calm our thoughts and to have a more workable mind. But we can even go farther than that. And we can use this calm, clear capacity for lucidity and clarity to prepare ourselves for insight, knowing what is going on in the mind in an ultimate sense. And Kempo Rinpoche said that what we are doing when we do quiet sitting is bringing the mind to rest. That kind of meditation is called shamatha, or tranquility. But shamatha by itself does not lead to Buddhahood. What shamatha does is pacify mental afflictions. And by pacifying mental afflictions, it allows the mind to rest. And by allowing the mind to rest, it has the capacity to experience itself, which is the practice of vipassana, or insight. And he said, what is the purpose of vipassana, or insight? He says, it is the gradual uncovering of our Buddha nature, the gradual uncovering of our own innate capacity for mind to know itself. He said, the wisdom of our Buddha nature is innate. It is not something that's imported from the outside. We don't have to somehow get it. It's actually naturally part of our minds. But he said, It is not composite. In other words, it's not a material thing we can grasp. However, it can be revealed. Our wisdom is innate, and it can be revealed. It produces he said, special insight into seeing something we have never seen before. Meditation on the mind does not create something. It's seeing something within our mind that was always there. We don't see that which is in our mind because it is obscured. It's like the day, the sky during the day, and the sky during the night. At night, the sun's light is covered by and blocked out by the movement of our planet. And at dawn, there is no sun that is created. It is merely revealed. And it is and this attainment of recognition of one's Buddha nature is the, he says, an irrevocable result from meditation. So how is meditation done? Well, the little instruction that I gave at the front here is a bit of a clue to how we cultivate this shamatha or calm abiding. We place the body in a comfortable position. We place our attention on our motivation, having the motivation to benefit others. Take that one deep breath at the beginning and then allow the breath to come and go naturally. For breath awareness meditation, you follow the breath going in and follow breath coming out. But what happens when you notice that a thought has arisen in your mind and distracted you from paying attention to the breath? What do you do then? The technique that Kemp Rinpoche taught us, somebody nicknamed it touch and let go, that the method that he taught us is that when we are distracted by a thought momentarily, we're sort of become fascinated. We become fascinated with the thought. We're sort of reborn in the world of that thought. And we think those thoughts and we go to those places and we maybe have a daydream. We maybe build our dream house. Maybe we solve a problem at work. And then suddenly we realize that we have not been paying attention to the breath and we have not been meditating. So what happens then is that the technique goes like this. You notice the thought that has distracted you. You can even label it thinking. You let go of the distraction, and then you return your attention to the breath and think of that return as a fresh start. So you notice, label, thinking, let it go, and then return to the breath for a fresh start. And by doing this over and over again, noticing, letting go, and returning over and over again, we learn how to let go of a thought. We learn how to let go of a single thought. Like I say, it could be a thought of something that happened yesterday. It could be a thought of something that's going to happen tomorrow. But what we do in the practice is we notice it, we label it, we let go of it, and then we return our attention for a fresh start. And the reason I'd say I call this a fresh start is because often people will get the mistaken understanding. They will get the mistaken thought that meditation is about clearing your mind so you don't have any thoughts. But that's not the function of meditation. In fact, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche said, it's impossible to make your thoughts go away. It's impossible to have no thoughts. It's impossible. So he said, what you need to do is learn how to work with the thoughts that arise. There's always a gap, he said, between thoughts. And yes, the gap between thoughts can get larger and larger and larger. And when thoughts attempt to arise, we can see them and not follow them. And so there are techniques that will have us have the experience of having fewer thoughts, but our mind is not stopping thoughts. So what Rinpoche recommended that we do is instead place our attention on the breath and then place our attention on returning to the breath. And he said you have to do this with a lot of gentleness and kindness, so that you cultivate gentleness and kindness towards yourself while you're practicing meditation. So that gentleness carries through and makes it possible for you to meditate a little longer. Because often what will happen is when we learn to meditate, we come up with a rigid understanding like, oh, I have to have no thought. I have to have no thought. I must not think. And then, of course, what happens is we have more thoughts. Kemp Rinpoche said that approach, actually putting pressure on the mind, actually creates more thoughts. So it's better to start with a lighter touch on your attention, a lighter touch on the object of your meditation. And so by placing your attention on the breath like this and just letting it stay there, it will stay for a short time, then it will wander, and then you'll bring it back. And then it will wander, and then you'll bring it back. And this process will happen over and over again. Hopefully this will be helpful to you. So we have a little bit of time here. So I'm going to take another short meditation break and do another little 1 minute meditation with you. And then I'll talk about the final topic in the six perfect virtues, which is the topic of wisdom. So once again, if you're sitting in a chair, placing your feet flat on the floor, hands palm downward on your legs. If you're sitting cross-legged on the floor, you can put your hands palm downward on the legs. You can hold the shoulders up by moving the breastbone up, and the chin can be tucked in slightly. The eyes can either be closed or cast downward, gazing. If you wish, you can touch the tongue, the tip of the tongue to the upper palate right behind the front teeth. What this does is it relaxes the muscles of the face. So we think about our motivation for practice, the excellent motivation of wishing that our practice benefits others. And then we start with one deep breath and breathing out, and then allowing the breath to come and go naturally, placing the attention on the breath as it goes out and comes in, or just being attentive to the movement of the air at the nostrils. We'll meditate for just a moment or two. Okay, another little session of meditation. What I'd like to encourage people to do is I'd like to encourage you, if you have questions about meditation, to go ahead. If you're on the Facebook, in the Facebook audience, you can type these questions into chat. And if you are watching on YouTube, you can send an email to Lama Kathy, LamaKathy at columbusktc.org, and I'll get your question, and then I'll answer them. I'll answer them via email to people who write me email, and I'll answer via Facebook for people who write questions on Facebook. So if you have any questions about your meditation practice, if it's going well, if you have a problem, just type them into chat, and I'll answer them at the conclusion of our live stream today. So you can see, by doing meditation as a practice, if we do a little bit, even just a little bit of meditation, we feel a little more clarity in our minds. And this actually helps us to practice the other virtues. If we are more aware of our thoughts, we can practice generosity with more of a conscious intention. Same for ethics. Same for patience, diligence, and so on. If we have more presence of mind and slow down the processes of thought, by slowing things down, we have more of a base of strength and stability from which to act and respond to the things that happen in our everyday life. And then we can also go on and use shamatha, or this tranquility meditation, as a basis for learning compassion meditation, which is something we'll talk about in another talk. So what happens when we practice a shamatha? When we practice shamatha, we can begin to see and correct our errors in thinking. We can actually say, well, wait a minute, I don't have to believe this, or I don't have to think like this, or I don't have to feel like this. I can actually choose to think and feel differently. And in this way, it actually can bring a little more freedom to ourselves. And so in this way, we get to know ourselves a little better. And knowing ourselves a little better, we can make better choices about what to do with our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, what to invest in. I have a friend who's a psychotherapist. And what she told me was that a lot of anxiety and depression can be attributed to focusing on and thinking about and emphasizing all of the wrong things, focusing on our fears, making the fears bigger, focusing on our anger, making our anger bigger, and so forth and so on. But if we learn how to let go of even just one thought in meditation, just one big, ugly, hairy thought, if we can let go of just one thought in meditation, that means we have the potential to let go of more than one thought. We have the potential to let go of theoretically any thought. And so by doing this over and over and over again, training in this way, we make our mind strong. And then by doing that, we give ourselves some room, some space. Our blood pressure hopefully goes down. Our heart rate hopefully goes down. And we can begin to make better decisions about what we're going to be attentive to and what we're going to do. So the final chapter in the practice of the six perfections, the final part of Rinpoche's presentation, was wisdom. He said there are two kinds of wisdom. There's worldly wisdom and there is transcendent wisdom. And he said worldly wisdom covers such things as mathematics and science and medicine. He said there are endless topics that a person can study in this world, and worldly wisdom can help us, but it won't actually free us from the cycle of cyclic existence, the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth that the Buddha called samsara. The only kind of wisdom that will get us off of the wheel of samsara is the inner wisdom, the inner knowledge of our own basic nature. Those of you who've read a little bit about Buddhism know that the Buddha described our mind as being non-material. In other words, the mind is not made of atoms or molecules. And yet, even though it is not a material thing, it's not nothing because it experiences the world. The mind is what we use to experience the world. All of the feelings we've ever had arise in our mind. All of the emotions we've ever had arise in our mind. All of the experiences, happy and sad, that we've ever had arise in our mind. Even the things we own, such as my brand new meditation gong, these only actually sort of exist in our mind. I don't own this object, but what I own is my impression of this object. And so in this way, because the mind is the seat of all experience, if we need to work with our experience of the world, we work with the mind. And so in Gampopa's presentation on the jewel ornament of liberation, he says that the other five perfections are, he said, like sightless people wandering without a guide until they're informed by wisdom. And so wisdom is that which arises from within our state of meditation. So when Kempo Rinpoche in his book, Dharma Paths, talks about the two kinds of wisdom, he says there's no end to worldly wisdom, and it's wonderful. And worldly wisdom can help us live more comfortably in samsara. But worldly wisdom is not a remedy for the suffering for samsara itself. It can make it more comfy for us in samsara, but it can't be the remedy for samsara itself. For that, we have to actually turn the mind within and have it regard itself to see how the mind creates our experience. And so And so in the jewel ornament, Gampopa says, wisdom will not arise of its own accord. But he says, for example, a small amount of wood might be ignited with a fire, but it will never become a powerful, enduring blaze. Yet, if we add a good quantity of extremely dry branches, if they are added, then it can make a mighty, long-lasting blaze. Similarly, if only a small amount of wholesome action has been established in our stream of being, great wisdom will not arise. But when vast amounts of great merits of generosity, ethics, and so on have been established, a great wisdom will emerge, and this will burn away all of our obscuring defilements. So in other words, the function of all of the previous paramitas, generosity, and ethics, and patience, diligence, and meditation, the function of all of these is to saturate our being with virtue. And by saturating our being with virtuous thoughts, virtuous words, virtuous deeds, by completely saturating ourselves with these, we actually create within ourselves the, I guess you could say, the atmosphere for wisdom to arise. And so, in other words, by doing the first five paramitas, we create the atmosphere for realizing our Buddha nature, which is the flowering of the final of the six paramitas. So you could say in some ways that the first five perfections aren't truly perfect until we accomplish wisdom, because they're still led by our confusion and impacted by our confusion. But you could also say that the first five paramitas lead to wisdom. So you need the first five in order to accomplish the sixth. And then once you accomplish the sixth wisdom, then it informs and makes the previous five absolutely perfect. In Kempo Rinpoche's teaching on this, he says, what happens when we practice a shamatha, meditation, quiet sitting meditation, is our mind comes to rest. And then we can begin to practice the techniques of allowing the mind to meditate upon itself. And I know that sounds confusing, and that's why there are special techniques and methods that are taught in the teachings on Vipassana and the practices in the Tibetan tradition, such as Dzogchen and Mahamudra and so on, which allow us to do these things. But all of these things eventually bring about what Rinpoche said was, he said, you experience your mind in a way that is direct and pure, and you've never experienced it that way before. He said, you'll know when you've gotten there, because he said, you will feel this overwhelming compassion for other sentient beings who have not realized what you have understood. And it's more than an understanding. It's not intellectual. It's more than an experience. It goes beyond experience. It's mind knowing itself. And this is why it's called the perfection of wisdom, because once we learn how to practice these forms of meditation, wisdom arises from the states of meditation that we undertake in these practices. So wisdom arises from within our states of meditation on shamatha and vipassana. So the best vipassana is that which is endowed with shamatha. In other words, if you read in the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, Mujal Togme says, it is known that shamatha, endowed with the insight of vipassana, conquers all mental afflictions. And the reason that that's said is because that's where wisdom comes into play. Our inner wisdom is finally revealed. And so that's a little bit of a talk about the last two of the six perfect virtues, according to my my notes from my teaching from Kempo Carter Rinpoche. And so rather than go on and on and on about this topic, I think we'll leave it here. And I will let you know that with the completion of this set of teachings on the six perfect virtues, I am starting to plan the next set of teachings. And I'm wondering if any of you have suggested topics that you'd like for me to cover. I've had a few emails lately on the topic of death and dying, and how a Buddhist prepares for death. And but then I've also had people write to me asking for more information about working with mental afflictions in everyday life. And there are endless topics that one can discuss in Buddhism, because the Buddha taught on all sorts of topics that have to do with the mind and our experience of this world and our mind and our life. So if you want to, you can send me an email to suggest something. You can also suggest something in the comments on my YouTube page, or you can also suggest them in the comments on the Facebook page. There will be another Dharma Talk next week, and that will be announced in the Columbus KTC Facebook page. And we'll be back here on YouTube next Sunday. So, and I guess what I'd like to do is I'd like to conclude with another brief meditation, and then I'd like to gather together and dedicate our goodness from this session. So once again, sitting comfortably in your chair, hands palm down on your legs, the shoulders are straight, the chin's tucked in, the eyes are cast downward, and the tongue can be touched lightly to the upper palate behind the front teeth. Beginning with a mental aspiration to benefit beings, one starts with a deep breath and breathing out. One then places one's attention on the breath as it comes in and goes out. And then when one notices distraction, one discards it and returns to the breath for a fresh start. So we'll sit for another short period. Thanks a lot for joining for meditation and for a talk today. And again, if you have any questions, make sure you can email me or you can send them to the Facebook page, and I'll answer them like right away. I'll be working on questions for the next 20 minutes or so. So I'll be watching for your emails and answering your questions. Meanwhile, do your best this week to try to fit in at least a little bit of meditation every day. If you can do a little bit of practice every day, this would be really, really good. And it's great to see you. I see people saying hi to me on Facebook, and thanks very much. And I see people liking on YouTube, so thank you very much. And it's my hope that these talks are useful, and I am looking forward to coming back and giving you more talks later. So let's dedicate the merit. We'll dedicate the merit of this session to all suffering beings, making the aspiration that they're free from suffering come to happiness and then to awakening. And coming to awakening, may they benefit all sentient beings. I'll recite a short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we be free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Okay, thanks, and we'll be seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.